Yeah, the purpose of this talk is to point out an application of the Bloom-Mikoski inequality to the theory of risk aversion. And I will explain what this is later. You know what this is. Okay. It is natural to start with a very famous theorem by Kenneth Arrow. I think it was proved already in the middle of the 60s. We have two assets. One secure asset, which we call a bond. And it is a so-called one-period market. So there are only two time points, fair and one. And the bond price at time zero is B naught. Here at time one, it is B naught times one plus R, where R is the interest rate. It's a positive number. Here we have the risk asset for the stock. The stock price at time zero is S naught. At time one, it is S1 equal to S naught 1 plus a random variable xi. Xi is a map from omega to this interval. So the stock price is always positive. We assume that expectation of xi is strictly greater than the interest rate. Now assume that we have an initial wealth. X here. We invest the fraction pi of the total wealth in the bond. No, stock. Let's say stock, in the stock. And the remaining part of the wealth in the bond. And we assume that pi is between 0 and 1 here. This is at time 0. Time 1, the wealth is random. X. And capital X is, as we see, pi x times 1 plus xi plus 1 minus pi x times 1 plus r. In this context, this expected wealth is natural to think of. But if we maximize this expected wealth, we see immediately that pi is 1. The optimal pi is 1, since the expectation of xi is greater than r. So we put, if we follow that strategy, we put all our money on the stock, which is risky. So that is, expectation is a bad measure of utility. Therefore, it is more standard to go to a so-called utility function, strictly concave function, strictly increasing. We assume that it is it is smooth. It is C2, and strictly increasing. And third, strictly concave. And then we try to maximize expected utility. Assume the maximum is obtained for this fraction. Then Arrow proved the following. if the relative risk aversion, what is that? It is minus x times second derivative of u over first derivative of x, if this function is increasing. In the wide sense, then pi hat decreases. As a function of x.
So am I right? The idea of the utility function is that you penalize losses more heavily than you reward gains.
Pardon?
You're right, your aim with the concave utility function is to penalize losses more than you reward gains.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is a famous theorem of Arrow. It is called Arrow's relative risk aversion theorem, and he can explain several phenomena in the society from this simple property. For example, it is known that rich people have more cash on the relative scale in terms of percent of their total utility than less rich people. And he can explain many other things which is observed in society. So Arrow has a strong belief in this property, that the relative risk aversion increases. Now, we see the time is rather thin here, only 2 points. So what happens in continuous time? And as far as I know, there are no such results earlier. So that is what I'm going to speak about. I will have a continuous time theorem of this sort, and I will work in Black-Scholes model, which is the most standard model, and prove something similar. Let me say a little bit about risk aversion first, because it is not so simple to grasp this condition immediately. So we go back to our initial wealth, x. I let h be a small positive number. And we play a game so that we can either win the amount h or we can lose the amount h. So here we have a random utility, capital X. So the probability to win is p, to lose is 1 minus p. And then we choose p so that the initial utility is the same as the expected utility here. Choose p in such a way. Then p is a function of the wealth, and it is a function of h. And it can be proved that using Taylor expansions, that p is in fact 1/2 plus something which are plus 1/4 times r eps u x h plus higher order terms. And here we have r eps u x, which is minus second derivative of u over first derivative of u. And it is, of course, rather natural that the so-called absolute risk aversion decreases, if you think of it a little bit. It must be so in most cases. But it is not prohibited to have another utility. But
sorry, the the absolute risk aversion decreases with wealth, but the relative one needs.
Relative one increases, naturally. Perhaps I can give some examples of utilities which are interesting. But first, we can choose h of this sort. H is lambda times x, and then we have that p is 1/2 plus the relative risk aversion times lambda plus higher order terms. But lambda x. So roughly speaking, it is worse to lose 10% if you have $1,000 than if you have $1. If this is increasing. Okay, examples. The relative risk aversion is constant only in two cases. A, we have logarithmic utility. Or we have power utility. However, there are phenomena in society which you cannot explain from constant relative risk aversion. For example, that rich people have more cash on the relative scale than less rich people. So, well, these utilities have many nice properties, but not all.
And rich people have more cash?
Yeah, I mean secure assets.
Rich people larger fraction of their wealth in cash.
Oh, and that's
the fraction.
Secure, but with no interest at all.
No. I think houses are almost secure cash, or almost cash.
Okay.
A popular utility function is this one. It is of this type. How is it? So with the same conditions on the parameters, V that delta positive. Here, the absolute risk aversion is possible to compute, and you get beta over beta x 1 minus gamma plus delta, and you see that it is decreasing. This utility function belongs to this class, hyperbolic absolute risk aversion. This is an hyperbolic function. The relative risk aversion is beta x over 1 minus gamma plus delta, which is increasing. So this is common.
What do you like this function called Green? Is it just examples, or it is some kind of, they should be given in such way by some kind of experimental model?
Okay, you well, if you use stochastic optimal control theory, these functions fit very well to the formulas. That is one reason to work with them, I think. But logarithmic utility can be motivated from qualitative properties.
This corresponds to modules.
Yeah. Okay, so now let us go to the Black-Scholes model and try to prove a theorem of Arrow's type in continuous time. The classical approach, as I said, is based on stochastic optimal control theory, Mertens approach. Later, we have an approach due to Karatsas and Shreves and perhaps others, more in line with option pricing. And it is much simpler. So I will follow that way. So let me repeat Black-Scholes model. You have two assets. Now we work on this interval. We have a bond. The bond price times zero, B naught. Then it grows exponentially. So at time small t, the bond price is B naught e to the rt. R is the interest rate. It is a fixed constant here. We have a goes from starts with S naught at time t. Stop price is S naught e to the mu minus sigma squared over 2 plus sigma wt. And wt is, this process is a normalized Brownian motion or a normalized Wiener process. Sigma is volatility, is a constant. Mu is a real constant, can be negative. Whether normalization here is, excuse me, either also. The normalization here is such that expectation of st is s naught e to the mu t, so that mu is a mean rate of return on the stock. And we assume always here, as in Arrow's model, that mu is greater than r. If you look at this stochastic differential, dst, we get st mu dt plus sigma dwt. And if we add a drift to the Wiener process there, we can change mu to r. I call the new process wq. So wqt is mu minus r over sigma t plus wt. Then this is pure algebra. Okay. Now, WQ is not a Brownian motion. Therefore, we shift the measure. We introduce a new measure. So the WQ becomes a Brownian, normalized Brownian motion relative to the new measure. So WQ is normalized Wiener process. Relative to this measure, the Q equal to e to the minus theta squared over 2 WT minus theta WT dP, where theta is mu minus R over sigma. That is Cameron Martin. This quantity theta is called market price of risk in economy. If we work with more complicated stock prices with stochastic coefficients here, this idea still works under some weak conditions. There is a theorem which is called Girsanov theorem, which is very important in finance. So the same principle holds for a random shift here. And that principle can also be used to prove Broom-Minkowski's inequality, which I proved in a paper a couple of years ago. And there are some similarities with mass transport. Well, now we go to a filtration. It is the least sigma algebra, which is generated by the null sets and the Wiener process up to time t. What is the value process in this context? Well, we have our initial wealth, x. It is a positive number. So we assume that x naught is x. And then we want to proceed in a so-called self-financing way. That means that we sell stocks and buy bonds for the corresponding amount of money, and conversely. So it is self-financing. It can be expressed as follows. We have the amount alpha t in the stock, and the remaining part of the wealth in the bond. And we must assume that alpha t only depends on the past. So it is progressively measurable. And we must assume something about alpha here. It is in L2, almost surely. And more important, the increment of the wealth, the infinitesimal increment of the wealth, must be, let's take the bond part first. The infinitesimal increment of this part must be this, because here we have r dt. And then we believe in a similar formula for the stock. So we assume this. It is not self-evident that this is the right point, but it is probably. This is self-evident. Okay. So this is a wealth process. And if we simplify a little bit, we come to a simple formula for dxt. Is simply rxt dt plus sigma alpha t dwt. And now we can use integrating factor and such things, and we get that xt times e to minus rt is x plus integral 30 t sigma alpha s dw. Sorry, we have q there. We have q there. So here we have a local q martingale. Admissible portfolio process is such that the corresponding alpha x is greater or equal to zero. Then it can be proved that the Wells process can go to zero. Can go to zero, but then it stays at that level up till the terminal point. It can never go up from zero. We said pi t equals to alpha t divided by the corresponding xt. If xt is positive, zero otherwise. If alpha is admissible. In continuous time optimal portfolio theory, it is always assumed that u prime plus infinity is zero. This is our fourth condition. Remember that u prime is strictly decreasing. But we can also have this situation. Well, in this situation, when u prime 0 plus is plus infinity. We define the inverse in this way. In this case, we do something similar, but we define I equal to 0 there. So here is a graph of I. We assume that I is not too big as a function of e to the x. We assume that there are positive numbers, so that this hold. This is a standard assumption in, I think, all papers. However, these authors often assume that I is convex, but that is not a good assumption here, since we want to work with the increasing relative risk aversion, and in that case it is not true that U is convex in general. So we have to modify the theory a little bit. We introduce the function h in that way, and we introduce the function script y, script x of y equal to the expectation h t I y h t. And this function is extremely important. In modern optimal portfolio theory, everything sits in that function. It can be expressed in terms of the Q measure in a slightly simpler way. So if you know option pricing, you see that this function script x at the point y is nothing but an option of European type which pays this amount to its owner at maturity. It is a zero time price of such an option. This function is smooth, C infinity, and the inverse of this function is always denoted by script y. Finally, a new class of admissible portfolios. We must assume that this expectation is finite. So U is a utility function, and X is a wealth process corresponding to alpha, which is admissible. Then this negative part must have a finite integral. And now to the problem. It is this problem. We want to solve for a given initial wealth small x, which is positive. And there is a remarkably simple solution. It is possible to give an explicit form of the optimal wealth process. This is a wealth process. And it is this wealth process is always positive before the terminal point. But if you are unlucky, you can go to zero, the terminal day, and the probability is positive. If U prime 0 plus is finite. So you are not sufficiently sensitive for a bad result. And then you can go to zero. You see, it is very explicit. And if script X has a derivative which is positive, then we have a very nice formula for the relative portfolio. Pi hat naught is minus U minus R over sigma squared times YX divided by X Y prime X. I mean, this holds for all Y. This was also known in classical portfolio theory, but under additional conditions that the value function is regular. So we avoid that difficulty with the regularity and Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman with this approach, which is integration all the time, no differentiation. Oh, okay. Well, if you think of log concavity, an expression like this is very nice. It is closely connected to log concavity of logarithmic wealth. Okay, so let's go to log concavity. The following conditions are equivalent. Relative risk aversion increases. U prime X is a log concave function of the logarithm of X, and C, the inverse function I of Y is a log concave function of logarithm I. I only prove that A is equivalent to B. If you compute this derivative, you obtain e to the xi u double prime e to the xi over u prime e to the xi, which is minus u rel u e to the xi. So that is a proof. and B and C are okay, whom works, or what you call it here. It's just a question about the definition of I. Remember that I is decreasing, and the inverse of U prime. I think I skipped this part because I want to show how Brumikowski comes in. There is another lemma which says that the following. Suppose that this function increases then the function x equal to script x of y is a log concave function of the logarithm of y, and y equal to script y of x is a log concave function of the logarithm of x. Moreover, the derivative of script x is strictly negative for all y positive. Now I let P be a Wienermeyer, and this function ht will be written ht of omega also. It is a path, Brownian path. I let epsilon naught and 1 be a probability measure. And I will write omega epsilon equal to epsilon naught omega naught plus epsilon 1 omega 1. So then we see that ht omega epsilon is equal to ht omega naught to the epsilon ht omega 1 to the epsilon 1. Now remember that this function I is log concave function of the logarithm of I. So we have I of y naught epsilon naught y 1 h. This quantity equals this one. And now we use the log concavity here to obtain I to the epsilon naught ht omega naught and I y 1 h. So So we now use the Brumminkowski inequality in the functional form put forward by Prekopa in the beginning of the 70s, and the result is what we want to see. So we have first proved the first part. The second part here, that inverse has this concavity property, is also clear. It is trivial. And this is also clear by inspection if we know this property for X. So I omit the details. So here is the theorem I want to prove. If the relative risk aversion increases, then this function, viewed as a function of x, decreases. And it is clear, since y is a log concave function of the logarithm of x. Corollary. Suppose that we have two individuals with the same utility function, but different initial wealths. Here is the first wealth process, and here is the second. It is trivial that the first is smaller than the second at each point of time from the formulas I have given. But it is not so trivial that the relative portfolios have the same property. But it follows from the result here that pi hat naught is an increasing function of wealth. So then we know that pi hat b is above pi at A at the origin, and it will continue in that way. Yeah, that was what I wanted to say, and I hope it is a new result, but as you see, very simple if you know the formulas from stochastic, from optimal portfolio theory. It is a combination of Prekopa and the standard formulas. But I've heard from Chris Rogers and Ralph Korn that it is a new theorem, and eventually it has been an open question for some time also. But much remains to be done here. The Black-Scholes model is not always so good in reality. It works excellent on the option market because banks and other hedge their positions using. They re-estimate sigma each day or twice a day, and they re-hedge, and it operates very well, even if the volatility is non-constant. I'm not sure that we have the same situation here. We have two parameters, mu and sigma, And sigma is difficult to estimate, but this is almost hopeless to estimate. If you think of Ericsson and such stocks, which has declined 95% to the last 2 years, the predictions were not like that. So mu is difficult. And it would be of great interest to have the same conclusion for a larger class of stochastic processes, price processes. But it is hard to avoid Prekopa here. It is also natural to have bounds on this portfolio, relative portfolio. You cannot borrow more than how much as you please. You can borrow to 80% of the stocks, perhaps. So it is interesting to have such bounds also. But I think it is possible to prove a similar result in the Black-Scholes case with this restriction. Okay, I must finish here. Thank you.
Other questions or remarks? Yes. So if not, then thank the speaker again.